Hello and welcome to the Food Connections podcast, the podcast that connects you with the food you eat. Every day we make choices about food, but how often do we get the chance to hear directly from farmers who produce it? Understanding where our food comes from and the people, pressures and passion behind it is a vital part of feeling more connected with our food. I'm Dr. Laura Wyness, a registered nutritionist with a real interest in all things food and nutrition. I love learning more about how our food is produced and getting to know the people who make that happen. In this episode, I'm joined by Andrew Conan, a farmer and the current president of the National Farmers Union in Scotland. Andrew farms in partnership near Ellen in Aberdeenshire, in the northeast of Scotland, where the main enterprises on the farm involve finishing cattle, breeding and finishing sheep, and growing spring barley. He's married to and ably assisted by Pauline and her son Andrew and daughter Sarah, who, in addition to helping at home, also work on neighbouring farms. Andrew has been a long-standing member of the National Farmers Union, or NFU, in Scotland, and was a local branch chair and represented the North East Regional Board for several years. In February 2021, Andrew was elected Vice President of NFU Scotland, and in February 2025 became President. I was so pleased when Andrew agreed to be a guest on the Food Connections podcast, and I'm very grateful for him to taking the time to speak to me. We actually recorded this chat on Christmas Eve. I asked Andrew about his experience in agriculture and his role as NFU Scotland President. In this episode, you'll hear how farming has evolved and continues to change, as well as the challenges farmers are currently facing, and what we as consumers can do to better support the people who produce our food. I hope you enjoy listening. Welcome to Andrew Conan. Welcome to the podcast this morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Laura. Yeah, thanks for inviting me on.
Right, and I feel you've been having a busy day. You've been up since the back of five, I believe, already.
Indeed, yeah. I had an early morning slot on the radio at 6 o'clock this morning discussing the inheritance tax changes for farmers yesterday. So it's been a monumental 24 hours for the agricultural industry.
I can imagine. It was quite a big issue. I saw quite a few stories in the news about that. So big change.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining me on the podcast today. I wanted to chat to you, first of all. I know you're obviously the NFU Scotland president, which we'll come on to a bit later on. But I wanted to start off by chatting a little bit more about your life as a farmer, because you are day-to-day a farmer and you've been doing that all your life. So can you explain a little bit more about what type of farming you do and just a bit of background?
Certainly, and I suppose I'm pretty unconventional compared to some farmers. I come from a farming family, my dad and uncles farmed with my grandfather originally and started farming just a mile from here. It's Kilmafillochnagat. That was 1958. And my dad is 86. He was 86 on the 3rd of December. And he's still full-time farming. And he farmed that partnership until last year. And since then, he'd been starting to work alongside me just down in the neighbouring farm. So farming's been, you know, in the blood of my days. And from the age I was able to work and run, we were out in the fields as youngsters, gathering stones in the fields, and just brought up that way in agricultural way of bringing up. And then lambing sheep every springtime and whatever, just helping out the farm. And but I took a different route to a lot of farmers and the fact that I also had a commercial background and commercial career, farm management for a start after I graduated in agriculture, and then moved into agricultural finance and then into agricultural machinery business, running a machinery dealership for nearly 20 years. But at all that time, still keep my hand in farming and the family farm at home. And then we moved here in 2001, the time of foot and mouth back on the go, and that was a terrible time for industry. I remember that well. The farm here was bought, and the farm route, the farm sale was delayed. The machinery sat in the field for 8 months because of foot and mouth, and people weren't allowed to mingle and whatever. And so that's why I come here and slowly built things up since then. So I do my own farm, and then Dad's got his own land now, can front up a family business. So the farm is just under 370 acres, owned, and 30 acres rented. Cattle. Sheep, so that's rearing cattle up for prime cattle, breeding sheep, and also buying lambs as well, and buying lambs to come down from Shetland, and they come down in great condition, usually in September, and we finish them off down here as well, growing barley as well. But I'm lucky, my family are really keen in the farming as well. I'm assisted by my wife Pauline, and then son Andrew. He's Andrew the fourth, in fact. My grandfather's an Andrew, my dad's an Andrew, I'm an Andrew. So, and yeah, he's now self-employed, looks after a neighbouring farm for neighbours, and helps out at home as well. Daughter Sarah, she's 23. She works in another neighbouring farm, shepherdess and stock person. She helps here at weekends and evenings and keeps asking, Dad, why are we always working every Sunday? But that's when we're all home together and get some work done. And there's also my dad, who's 86, now working here as well. So there's something going on all the time here. So yeah, quite diverse. And then in the springtime there, we took home some cows and calves as a new enterprise. So young Andrew and Sarah, they're dead keen in the cattle side of things. So we're just slowly building up a breeding herd of cattle as well.
Gosh, just a lot of variety there. I mean, you started, you said, in farm management and then agriculture finance and the farm machinery.
Yeah.
The first podcast episode I did was with Dave Barron, actually another local farmer in Northeast, and he does the beef cattle. And one thing that he said was, you know, you have to kind of multitask, or you do lots of different jobs as a farmer, and it's about problem solving and a bit of engineering and project management and all these different skills. So yeah, I'm sure that has been useful.
Every day is different. Fresh challenges every day. So there's something great about, agricultural industry. I think it's in your blood. I think everyone's involved in farming are proud to be involved in farming, and the landscape, the countryside, and everything around about it. So a very passionate industry.
And if your dad's still finding jobs at 86, it's obviously a good job to have for life.
He's still mostly combining this year, and he started a couple of days ago as well. So.
Okay. Good to have an extra pair of hands on the farm anyway. So yeah, you were talking about the livestock you have. So you have cows and sheep. So I grew up on a farm, but I'd never really known a lot about sheep because we've never had sheep on my dad's farm. So can you tell me a bit more about that? The only thing I know about sheep farming is you need good fencing to keep them in. Is that right? Because they escape quite a lot.
It certainly helped. It certainly helped to have good fencing. This year we've got 160 breeding sheep with the rams. They'll be due to start lambing about the 1st of April. And then we've got another 85 replacements coming forward for next year. So we're building the flock numbers up as well. And, I've been brought up with sheep all my life, and that's just the way it's been. So we've changed various breeds, and there's a Texel breed, but it's mostly for meat that we're breeding sheep for and trying to eat quality. And we're always brought up to try and have decent livestock. And my grandfather and uncle, who was a shepherd at the time, again, very much a stickler for, decent quality and whatever. And it's full on. The season starts, you could say the season starts with sheep when you put the rams in. And then the gestation period for sheep is 5 months less 5 days. So that's why we put them in about the 5th of rams on the 5th of November. We should be lambing about the 1st of April thereabout. And look forward to that. That's a busy time of year. I always said it's three weeks of madness. So night and day, no much sleep sometimes. And that's just how it is. So because that's the more effort you put in then, the more reward to get on. So sheep are grazed outside all the year round, and inside at night for lambing to shelter them from the weather and whatever and such like, and then grow them on through grass and into the autumn. But yeah, I've been passionate to being involved in sheep farming all my days.
And is the cattle, is it steady throughout the year in terms of workload?
Yeah, well, it varies a bit as well. So we're in the new system now where we buy cattle. They're about approximately 12 months old in the new year, so January through to the end of March. Then we'll bring them on and finish them off for the abattoirs really from, I would say, end of November onwards. So, and they've cattle going away at the moment. And that's fairly steady. Again, with the breeding livestock, so having just bought our first 10 cows and calves last spring, they're due to start calving in January, but the 6th of January, my daughter Sarah tells me. So. And we've also invested in cameras, latest technology, cameras in the shed so we can watch the calving and keep an eye over the lambing as well when that comes around in April, just to help really, and you make sure we don't miss anything and be able to assist when needed.
That sounds really useful. And I suppose there's probably been quite a few changes in the way that you farm over the decades that you've been farming, or since your father was farming.
Huge changes, and you know, mechanisation's been the biggest thing. So I think my dad was quite chuffed. I think he just would miss the days of the horse and whatever, and the basic tractors and basic combines, but the size of machinery has come on, and then the technology as well. So massive amount of technology. It's a high-tech industry these days. Another thing is the bigger machinery, more technology, but less labour. And that's become an issue anyway, in the fact that it's like all industries, it's a struggle to get enough labour on farms these days.
So it is quite a highly skilled job working on a farm. You need to know what you're doing.
Indeed. And whether you're driving a tractor, you know, that if you think the value of the machinery these days, you could be driving a £200,000 tractor, you could be driving a £600,000 combine. There's a lot at stake with that machinery. And also for stock as well, you know, being a stock person looking after, be it cattle, be it a shepherd, a shepherdess for sheep or pigs or poultry, dairy, whatever. You know, it's a highly technical job, and I think those who are involved in that have a good passion and an affinity to livestock, and that's so important.
So you are the National Farmers Union of Scotland president. Is that the right title? Can you tell me a little bit, first of all, about the National Farmers Union? What is it and what's its role?
Yeah, so the NFU Scotland, National Farmers Union of Scotland, is a membership organisation. There's over 9,000 members, farmers and crofters. And we exist basically in order to try and ensure a profitable and sustainable future for the agricultural industry in Scotland. That's our prime means for existing. That's what we're all about. So we're basically a lobbying and influencing organisation. And, you know, with our policy team, our regional teams, and a lot of engagement with government and other industry stakeholders, trying to ensure that policy going forward is fit for purpose, it's fair, and it actually suits our industry to deliver on that long-term, sustainable and profitable future.
And what's some of the kind of issues that NFU have been involved in this year?
Yeah, well, the last year has been quite incredible. The main issue, which we touched on earlier, was the inheritance tax reforms by the UK government. And that has been number one topic, actually, since the 30th of October 2024, in the UK budget then. And since then, there's been a huge effort, NFU Scotland, along with other farming unions, trying to lobby hard on government. I was elected on the 7th of February this year as president, and that was on Friday the 7th, and Monday the 10th, I was down in Westminster lobbying and a big rally down in Westminster to try and highlight the injustice of the IHT reform. And even on there, you know, I was down 4 weeks on the trot to Westminster, which would be unheard of for an NFU Scotland president, being down in Westminster 4 weeks in a row. But so intense, so much emotion, the whole job, and there was so much at stake. So in one of those trips, there was a combine and big machinery going round through Whitehall, and myself and other farming union presidents of NFU England and Welsh counterparts, and the Ulster Farmers Union, myself, we went round front of that combine, and then we addressed probably 10,000 people from the top of the combine in Whitehall. That'd be one of the most emotional moments of my life, when you're speaking to about 10,000 folk with a microphone in your hand and highlighting the fact that we're there standing, UK farmers from all over UK standing side by side, the UK farming presidents from the different unions standing side by side, determined to try and fight this injustice with the inheritance tax reform. And it's a moment I'll never forget in Whitehall, you know, and you see that Big Ben in the distance, you're top of a combine. So one of my friends did message me when he saw it, and he said, well done. But he says, this is the new boy band. I'm standing top of a combine with a microphone in my hand in the middle of Whitehall. A hugely big moment. And so IHT, and that has been the number one topic, and the massive lobbying up and down to Westminster, where membership have engaged hugely as well. Farmers and crofters, they've been out in the streets and rallies, doing tractor rallies, engaging with the public, speaking to their MPs, writing to their MPs, and that's really what we exist for. And here we are. So the 23rd of December there, the government then does a rethink inheritance tax. So big issue. Other things, there's multiple things. If we look closer to home, the Scottish Government were looking to carve out a new agricultural policy. And that's important, be a policy that's fit for purpose, policy that delivers on our objectives of ensuring a profitable agricultural industry, sustainable agricultural industry. And that needs support. It needs support that's fit for purpose, because agriculture delivers on so many more things just than producing food. A vibrant industry, well, it'll produce quality food that's famous the world over, but also it delivers in the rural economies, the national economy. It can deliver in biodiversity and enhance nature and also help mitigate climate change. Our industry can do all that, but we need to be profitable and sustainable to do so. And the old cliche, you can't go green if you're in the red, is so true to agriculture. So if we can make a pound, we'll invest it in the economy and invest it in nature and climate mitigation as well. It's a great return for the national economy, really.
It's such a vital part and touches so many different areas, as you say, from producing food is a big one and having food security, but also climate change issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's massive. I mean, we could talk all day about the things we're up to. You know, there's various bills go through Parliament, we do submissions and consultations, be it land reform, there's things in climate change, we're looking at trade deals, the impact of trade deals, border control, you know, animal disease. We're on an island in the UK trying to keep disease out of the UK, multiple issues. And then obviously, if you think about it now, the EU-UK reset deal, we're looking at the implications of that for slightly more joined up thinking with Europe again. The SBS deal, that's the sanitary and phytosanitary implications of that as regards animal and crop health and such like, and the legislation in there. And that's just a few of the multiple things that's ongoing on a daily basis.
Yeah, gosh. Yeah, you've got a busy year ahead of you then, next year.
Indeed. Well, the election year coming up this year, obviously. So, and then if we think about it, the nation's maybe winding down for Christmas and New Year, but the 30th of January with the Scottish budget. So already were submissions in for that to try and ensure adequate funding going forward, increase multi-annual funding, give our industry confidence to deliver on everything I've already said, which is food production, rural economies, biodiversity, nature, climate change. And then with the manifestos are all out ahead of the Scottish elections in May. Lots to happen in 2026. Busy year ahead.
Absolutely. And I suppose myself working as a nutritionist, one of the things I've been keeping a close eye on is the Good Food Nation Act, which is a new legislative framework to create a fairer, healthier and more sustainable Scottish food system for all. So I was wondering what your thoughts were on the Good Food Nation vision and how do you think that will impact farmers and the food we produce here or the food that we eat here?
Yeah, Good Food Nation, very topical, obviously. And as you describe it there, we'd welcome everything and the objectives of the Good Food Nation, trying to ensure quality food, hopefully local produced food, get on the plates of the nation. But the frustration, I would say, is the Good Food Nation's bill seems to have stuttered and spluttered for the last good few years and never really got a lot of momentum going. And that's our biggest frustration, and we need to see it going forward. And it needs real ambition, I think, from government to deliver on this occasion. And within that, we've just set up a new department within our policy team, which is in supply chains, because we see supply chains, the food supply chain, being so important for our agricultural industry going forward, that sustainable supply chains. And within that, we're looking at the Good Food Nation and public procurement. And there's massive opportunities within public procurement. There's also huge frustrations. But on that, we've been engaging in the last 6 months in particular with meetings with Scotland XL, who procure the food and via through Scottish Government, COSLA. And then only a few weeks ago, we co-hosted a meeting with the Public Sector Catering Alliance to get organisations round the table to see how jointly we can come together and put more quality Scottish food on the plates, Scottish dinner plates, especially in the public sector.
Yeah, so having more Scottish or locally produced foods in schools and hospitals and care homes and prisons and places like that. Yeah. Well, Scotland has a rich larder of healthy Scottish foods. One of the projects I was involved in was the creation of the Scottish Eat Well Guide, which shows how it's kind of the national dietary guidance. And there's a UK version, but there's now a Scottish version showing just how foods that grow locally in Scotland can fit in a healthy and balanced diet. So we definitely grow a lot of healthy, nutritious foods here.
The Scottish diet is so important, and we've also had meetings with the Food Commission, Scottish Food Commission and whatever, and I recall a meeting earlier in the year and highlighting how much important diet and health is, and you know, the money that the Scottish Government invests in Scottish agriculture amounts to 660 million. However, it was pointed out in one meeting that tackling diabetes in Scotland alone sees a bill of over 880 million. That puts into context just how important diet and health is in the context of the Scottish population going forward.
Yeah, it's often an afterthought or gets forgotten about, I feel, a lot of the time, just having that preventative approach of, you know, making sure that we live in a healthy food environment. And okay, well, putting that aside, I mean, we could talk for ages on that, but I wanted to move on as well to get your thoughts on kind of the sustainability aspect of things, because there has also been an increasing focus on environmental impacts of the food we eat, and dietary guidelines as well are shifting towards more plant-based diets and cutting down on animal foods like meat and dairy. I wondered what your thoughts were on farming, meeting the kind of climate change targets, and how farming is adapting to being more sustainable.
Yeah, certainly, Laura. And how I see it, it doesn't matter what policy there is out there, be it for agriculture or anything else, climate and climate change mitigation comes into a lot of it. And it's such a emotive topic, climate change. But we see it with the weather patterns. There's definitely a shift in weather patterns and whatever. We saw lots of snow when I was a youngster, and these days we hardly see it. So 1-2 days a year, perhaps. And extremes of weather as well. Well, this year, extremes of heat, but also extremes of drought and extremes of moisture and flooding as well. But big frustration for me is how you judge agriculture. And I think a key thing for me is that for too long, Scottish agriculture, all agricultural industries have been judged on the emissions, but not enough been taken into as regards to sequestration. You know, so it could be growing crops and bringing carbon back into the soils. And I think there's just so much in there. I think we've been unfairly judged, basically. And we're often compared with the forestry sector, where, you know, it's lamented how good trees are at sequestering carbon. There's no word the emissions and get there in the first place. So we need balance. We need facts and science. And that's essential. And leading into that, there's lots happening. There's such things as carbon audits, where farmers are now doing a carbon audit to see how much, you know, kilos of CO2 per kilo of product that's being produced. And then you can monitor that, you can benchmark that, and then try to see efficiencies. And in addition to that, soil sampling has now become very important. If you get the soil to be in the right condition with the right nutrients in it, then that could be more efficient for the crop. And more efficient for fertiliser use as well. And by doing that, that then can reduce the emissions of that crop. There's a lot happening just in that space alone.
Yeah, there's two sides to the story, isn't there? Farms, obviously there are some carbon emissions, but as you say, farms are really good at kind of soaking up the carbon from the atmosphere or storing it in the soil, so that they both need to be considered.
Yeah, and I have to say, I think farmers are the solution. You know, we've got the land there, and the land is the biggest, you know, storage of carbon. And that's why we need to be encouraged to make sure we do our best with that land and sequester as much carbon as possible. But then we use things like GPS and high-tech agriculture to try and be more efficient, reduce emissions and things as well. So it's just so much going on there at the moment.
And I suppose some of the land can only be used for certain types of farm and for grazing. I mean, some of the land's just not suitable to grow crops.
That's such a relevant point, Laura. The Climate Change Committee for the UK, the Advisory Committee, they suggested there should be a 26% reduction in livestock in Scotland. If that happened in Scotland, it would have a decimating effect on our industry. You know, 85% of the land in Scotland is designated is LFA, less favoured area land, which means most of it's only fit for grazing livestock and things. And thankfully, the Scottish Government realised that. And to have a draconian cut and lash at numbers would only have a massive impact, not only in farming and crofting, but also in rural communities as well, and the whole supply chain. It's interesting when challenging the Climate Change Committee, I challenged them. And so, Andrew, but you can reduce your numbers. Scotland's farmers and crofters can grow more crops and protein crops. But how do you do that on this top of a hill or a mountain? And that's a naivety within things. And we've to farm what we're able to farm with. But that doesn't take away from the fact that there's already so much technology and so much effort going in cropping types and efficiencies and livestock efficiency, even engine efficiency and machinery these days to try and reduce our emissions. It's a big topic.
It's such a complex area as well, but and there's so many different factors to consider. But yeah, it sounds like farmers are adapting and becoming much more efficient and farming in a way that is more sustainable.
Yeah, and that's, we're in the midst of the moment of trying to lobby government and to work with government to actually get the Future Agricultural Support plan in place where they recognise they'd have to meet climate change ambitions, and it's working hand in hand with government to do that. And, as I said earlier, soil sampling, carbon audits, biodiversity audits, animal health and welfare plans, that type of topics all help deliver an efficient and probably hopefully a lower carbon agriculture going forward.
And also thinking of from a consumer point of view, how would you say, I mean, farmers do an amazing job, I think personally, but how would you say consumers can help support farmers? I mean, does buying locally produced food or checking the label to see where our food is produced, is that a good way to support local farmers? Or what's your kind of tips on how we as consumers can support our local farmers?
Yeah, well, consumers and supporting Scottish farmers and crofters, it's a big topic for us. Comes back into our supply chain workings. We launched a year and a half ago what we call the Shelf Watch Initiative, and that's really to identify across probably the eight major retailers, what's on the shelves, how much is Scottish, how much is British, but also look into labelling, looking at branding and awareness within these retailers. And it really has opened up a huge topic of debate. And we're doing that. We're now on regular meetings with the retailers. And it's not to knock the retailers and to have arguments, but actually to work with them to understand their thought process and to see how we can work together to promote Scottish. So we're looking to asking the retailers, first of all, highlighting that there is a demand for Scottish there. Over 80% of the Scottish consumers have suggested if the pricing is competitive within reason, because they'll pay a bit more for quality, they would like to support Scottish if they certainly could. And if Scottish is not available, maybe depending on the type of product it is, then British. And there's definitely a like an allegiance and loyalty to that. So highlighting this to the retailers has started to make a difference. But it's also where they're sourcing it from, we need to highlight the quality comes from Scotland with the highest animal welfare standards on the globe, with our farm assurance schemes, and be it QMS, be it the Red Tractor, be it SQC for the crops and whatever. And it's interesting, I go through supermarkets quite a lot, just looking at what's on the shelves and just watching consumers. And I remember no long after COVID, and I was in one supermarket and I saw this couple, and they were the meat aisle and looking for beef, and they lifted a pack and they lifted another pack and put it down. I says, "Looks like you're not finding what you're looking for." "No, we're in here to buy Scottish beef, and there's no Scottish beef here, so we're away to another supermarket to buy our Scottish beef." And that said a lot for me, and there is a loyalty out there. But the other thing within this, I think, is labelling, and labelling is so confusing. And sometimes you see a salt there on a package or a branding from a food manufacturer, and it doesn't mean to say it's come from Scotland. And that comes back again to public procurement we spoke about earlier. One of the things we highlighted was that, well, we're getting it from a Scottish-based company, but doesn't mean to say it's always Scottish. So we push on with branding and also commingling. There's nothing more infuriating when you see that there's maybe Scottish and British and Irish or New Zealand all mixed through each other into the unsuspecting consumer, especially when in a hurry and time's limited. Oh yeah, looks like Scottish, and you could be away home with something from another country altogether. So there's a big awareness for consumers, but we certainly would welcome all the support we can get from our consumers, because without consumers we don't have an industry. But by buying and supporting Scottish and local, it's not just the farmers and the crofters you're looking after, it's the entire supply chain, the food supply chain, all the jobs within that. It's the rural economies as well. And as I go back to what I said earlier, and by doing that, we can also invest in more environment going forward as well.
Yeah, I'm certainly that person in the supermarket that checks the labels. And even in restaurants, I often kind of an annoying customer asking, where do you source your beef from, or where does this come from? And they have to double check with the chef. But it's always good to know where you're getting your food from.
Absolutely. And we encourage that for consumers and customers to actually just ask where it's coming from.
I wondered as well if I could ask you about the Christmas veg, because what's your thoughts on having like a bag of carrots for 15p. It just seems, I know there's kind of a price wars in supermarkets just now, like who can sell the cheapest Christmas veg at the moment, just to get consumers in the supermarket door, I think. But it does seem a bit kind of uncomfortable. That is that below the cost of production, or who's suffering, or are farmers suffering from this price point, or are the supermarkets adjusting for that cost and taking up the extra cost?
Well, I'm so glad you brought it up. We did some pre-Christmas press releases just last week, and one of them was actually on what we call deep discounting by retailers, which is basically excessive discounting. And your 15 pence, I even hear 5 pence for a bag of carrots. There is definitely a price war goes on at this time of year, Easter as well. And it infuriates our producers, our farmers. And we've highlighted this, all the retailers, as part of our engagement recently with all the major retailers. In our minds, it devalues food, because it's way beyond the cost of production. And now the challenge, well, but the farmers are not paying for it. But somewhere along the line, the industry and the producers paying for it. You get nothing for nothing in life. And but trying to influence them to stop this discounting seems to be difficult, because they're all at it, and it just seems to be a race to see who can get the headline with the lowest price. Now, I totally recognise that the time of year when when wallets and purses can be can be stretched financially, we do feel for the consumer as well. There has to be a happy medium, happy line in this. So we call it deep discounting. War against it. We keep trying to suggest to retailers it's too much, it's too far. And also, I think in addition to devaluing food, it actually can encourage food waste, because, well, for all the cost of that veg, well, if we don't need it, we'll throw it out or whatever. And food waste, one, it's a terrible thing for environment as well. Food waste is a big source of carbon emissions. So I think it's a responsibility for that as well. But such a topical item there, and I'm so pleased you brought that one up.
Well, I mean, I did feel uncomfortable buying it, but I have bought a lot of parsnips and carrots and made enough carrot and parsnip soup to last me until March. It's now in the freezer. But yeah, I did wonder what your thoughts were on that. So thanks for sharing that. I want to just finish off, I guess, by asking you what your wishes for 2026 are. Looking at the future, what do you hope, or what's your wishes for the farming industry in the year ahead?
Yeah, a few things there. I mean, I think stability for industry is essential. And I think that brings in some of the topics we've discussed. We need to get adequate prices. We need to get rewarded for the efforts that we're doing. We can't go on in some sectors delivering below the cost of production. And as I said before, if we get adequate financial rewards, farmers and crofters will reinvest that money back into the economy and spend it. And that really is a stimulus throughout the rural and national economy then. And I think supply chain fairness, again, what we touched on there, just getting right rewards and due rewards for the quality products we're doing there. That also needs fit-for-purpose funding from government, the Scottish Government, and that's why in 2026 we've got the Scottish Government budget on the 13th of January, pushing for an increased multi-annual commitment for agriculture. And by doing that, that money is a great investment. Return on investment can stimulate the whole economy and everything else I've discussed earlier. And we look forward to elections as well in May. And my wish list for that would be that all parties understand and appreciate how important agriculture is for Scotland and the Scottish economy going forward.
Well, let's hope that all comes true. And we're recording this on Christmas Eve as well, so I just wondered if I could throw in a final thought. Do you have a wish list for Santa, or what are you hoping to get from Santa this year?
Well, I've been so busy lately that I've hardly time to think about it, but I did have it with a comment last night about Santa and Christmas presents. And as I said earlier, we just invested in CCTV cameras for our lambing and calving shed. And even though I paid him through the business, Dad, that's your Christmas present, I'm told. Like, so I was brought up to be grateful for what I receive, Laura, and that's the way I will continue. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, really appreciate you spending some time today and chatting about all the issues. It's been really insightful. So thank you so much and have a great Christmas.
Excellent. And to yourself, Laura.
Thanks for listening to this Food Connections podcast. Do check out the show notes for some really useful links related to this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to me if you could give the podcast a rating and leave a short review. It would really help others discover the show. If you know someone who might enjoy this episode, please do share it with them. I'd also love to hear from you. If you have any comments, guest suggestions, or if you'd like to sponsor the podcast, just get in touch. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.